Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 295, an update on foot and mouth and, if time permits, mad cow disease. This is being recorded on April 26th of the year 2001. We're going to begin by taking a look at an article that describes the proposals to deal with foot and mouth disease if it should crop up in the United States. And I think this is of more than passing concern because it would certainly require a great allocation of national resources and would not incidentally involve some of the same elements as many of the martial law contingency plans that were put on the books in the 1980s by the Reagan administration. This article is from the New York Times of Tuesday, April 17th of the year 2001. The article is by Elizabeth Becker, B-E-C-K-E-R. It's datelined Washington, April 16th. It's headlined, Cattle Disease Poses Threat to Run Wild, U.S. Finds, and it reads in part as follows. The first comprehensive exercise about how the nation would contain foot and mouth disease showed that an outbreak could be stopped only with the combined strength of all federal disaster agencies, including the military, agriculture department officials have said. After decades of relying largely on state and local governments to help contain animal diseases, the Department of Agriculture asked the Federal Emergency Management Agency to develop a plan to combat this one as forcefully as if it threatened human lives, said Clifford Oliver, the director of Agriculture Department's Office of Crisis Planning. Quote, "We were coming to the realization that state and local government would be overwhelmed and the USDA would be overwhelmed if foot and mouth broke out," Mr. Oliver said. With Britain, one of the most advanced agricultural nations, enduring an epidemic of foot and mouth disease, and British troops belatedly called in for mass burials of hundreds of thousands of slaughtered animals, American farmers and ranchers began lobbying their state agriculture chiefs for better planning. Those officials recently urged Agriculture Secretary Ann M. Veneman to find out what the rest of the government could do to contain an outbreak. The Federal Catastrophic Disaster Response Group, which normally worries about bioterrorism or industrial disasters, note that, organized the tabletop exercise for the Agriculture Department on Wednesday, bringing together representatives of 26 agencies, including the Departments of Defense, Commerce, Interior, Energy, and Health and Human Services, Mr. Oliver said. The exercise confirmed fears that without the entire government working to contain it, the disease would spread like wildfire if it ever reached this country. So note that not only the Federal Emergency Management Agencies, but the Federal Catastrophic Disaster Response Group, which normally worries about, note this, bioterrorism, and the Department of Defense would all be required to combat an outbreak of foot and mouth disease. By the way, this program is a follow-up to For the Record number 287 and will contain some material which is deliberately overlapped with 287. Now, in the context of foot and mouth disease and the possibility, please note that, the possibility of bioterrorism, and as was the case with For the Record number 287, I want to stress that this program is interrogatory in nature, and once again, forgive the bad pun, this entire broadcast could be classified as food for thought and grounds for further research. Following article is from the Financial Times of Tuesday, April 24th of the year 2001. This article is by Francis Williams in Geneva. It's headlined, Draft Gives Fresh Push to Germ Warfare Pact. The article reads in part as follows. Slow-moving talks on an effective anti-cheating regime for an international treaty banning germ weapons were given a fresh push yesterday when the chairman presented his own compromise draft as a basis for negotiation. Speaking on the first day of a three-week negotiating session, Tibor Toth, T-O-T-H, of Hungary, said he was optimistic that a verification protocol for the 1972 Biological Weapons Treaty could be concluded by November when states parties to the treaty hold their fifth review conference in Geneva. However, the six-year-old negotiations remain stalled on key aspects of the policing regime, notably concerning the scope and intrusiveness of on-site inspections and issues relating to export controls and technology transfer. Skipping down in the article, speaking of Tibor Toth, the chairman of this commission, He appealed to the 50 or so countries taking part in the talks to make concessions to conclude a protocol this year. He said a verification regime would help to head off attempts by rogue states to produce or acquire biological weapons capable of mass destruction of human, animal, and plant life. Moreover, by strengthening international cooperation on disease surveillance, it would also contribute to reducing deaths and illnesses from infectious diseases, whether natural or man-made. Note the last sentence here. Foot and mouth disease is among those potentially covered by the protocol, Mr. Toth said. So note that the urge to ratify an effective anti-cheating regime for the 1972 verification protocol for the verification protocol for the 1972 Biological Weapons Treaty. Note that one of the things covered by the protocol is foot and mouth disease, and note that some of the same agencies that would be called upon to deal with a bioterrorism incident in the United States have been theoretically at least tabbed as being required to deal with mad cow disease. What we're going to do now is to take a look at an op-ed column that appeared in the San Jose Mercury News this past week. And this op-ed column, interestingly enough, speculates about bioterrorism and specifically discusses the mad cow epidemic, not mad cow, but the foot and mouth epidemic in the United Kingdom, although the individual stresses that there's no evidence that the appearance of mad cow in the United Kingdom is the result of bioterrorism. And I would add to that, I would not rule out that possibility. I suspect that reading between the lines, this particular analyst may very well believe the same thing, or at least may be speculating inside, at least, between the lines about the same thing. This is from the San Jose Mercury News of Tuesday, April 24th of the year 2001. It's by Charles Dulfer, D-U-E-L-F-E-R, who's a guest scholar at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and ex-deputy chair of the UN Special Commission on Iraq. And this article was written for the Los Angeles Times. This article is headlined, "If an enemy attacks, will we know it?" And the article reads in part as follows. Could the United States be at war and not know it? The current outbreak of foot and mouth disease in the United Kingdom makes one wonder. Not about Britain's plight specifically, there's nothing to suggest that the epidemic there is an act of war. But consider how quickly and easily it is spread. Then consider a regime such as Iraq's, which has demonstrated a commitment to developing biological weapons. Might such a nation find it advantageous to strike anonymously and biologically by spreading an economically devastating disease or a slow-acting toxin? This is not an abstract question. The Iraqi regime insists that the economic sanctions imposed on it are nothing less than a genocidal attack by the United States and the United Kingdom. The regime has said it is still fighting the Persian Gulf War and that it will respond to the plight of the Palestinians. I would add in previous For the Record programs, I've dealt with Gulf War syndrome and the research by Dr. Garth Nicholson that a fair number of the GIs suffering from Gulf War syndrome have been infected with an apparently genetically altered infectious microorganism called a mycoplasma, which appears to have had the protein gene from the AIDS virus placed into it, and which in turn was apparently given to the Iraqis by American biotechnologically capable elements, and that it was apparently used by the Iraqis on GIs in the Gulf War. Happily, those GIs who are suffering from mycoplasma-related Gulf War syndrome are treatable through a cycle of drugs that are readily available. However, some of those drugs are not being, anyway, some of the GIs have not been treated with those particular agents that are available. So the disease goes unabated in some who are suffering from it. And I would also note that some of the Gulf War syndrome appears to be contagious, and that would certainly not be the case with a chemical agent or with a disease caused by depleted uranium. Doxycycline, among other antibiotics, does apparently treat the mycoplasma-related Gulf War syndrome. And again, that would suggest biological warfare. Skipping down in this particular article, and if a slow-developing disease can't be linked to the event that triggered it, how can a country prevent such attacks? How can it respond? Science might be able to address part of this problem. Subtle differences in varieties of biological agents can be analyzed and traced to certain regions. Other effects might have signatures that can be observed in victims. Christine Gosden, G-O-S-D-E-N, a professor of medical genetics at the University of Liverpool, has been conducting a program of research and humanitarian assistance in the northern regions of Iraq, where the population and environment might have been subjected to biological weapons in addition to chemical ones. So again, note here that even in the event that a biological warfare attack had gone undetected, a slow-developing disease can be analyzed with regard to subtle differences and genetic differences at that in biological varieties of these particular agents. And we're going to note that for present purposes in a couple of different respects. In the first place, I want to note that Iraq has been developing, according to a recent UN investigation, it has been developing foot and mouth disease. We're going to review an article that we looked at in the aforementioned For the Record program number 287, titled, Don't Put Your Foot in Your Mouth When Talking About Mad Cow Disease, and That's No Bull. This article is from the Financial Times of March 2nd of the year 2001. It's by the Financial Times International staff. It's headlined, Missiles and Viruses Still Trouble Experts. And this is about a United Nations group that has been inspecting for biological and other weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The UN inspection group is called UNMOVIC. I'm not sure how that's pronounced. UNMOVIC, that's how I'll pronounce it. UNMOVIC. And this article reads in part as follows. Missiles, biological weapons, and chemical weapons form the three main areas of concern outlined in a classified report on Iraq by UNMOVIC, the United Nations Arms Inspections Group. UNMOVIC is a group of weapons experts and inspectors set up in late 1999 by the UN Security Council to succeed UNSCOM, the controversial former inspection body for Iraq, which was disbanded after it withdrew from the country in December of 1998. And skipping down about Iraq's apparent biological warfare research, Iraq's research into viruses, including polio, influenza, foot and mouth disease, the camel pox virus, infectious hemorrhagic conjunctivitis virus, and rotavirus, was also worrying. So note that a recent UN inspection body was concerned about Iraqi research into foot and mouth disease. I would also note in that same context that the strain of foot and mouth disease that has broken out in the United Kingdom is one that is native to the Middle East. This article, and again, this was in For the Record program number 287, this article is from the San Jose Mercury News of Friday, March 30th of 2001. It's an AP story by Emma Ross. It's Dateline London, headlined, Foot and Mouth Trots Around the Globe, subtitled, Most Contagious Disease in World is Widespread. Scientists track strains but can't trace pathways. And skipping down, experts have identified the virus causing the outbreak in Europe as belonging to the Pan-Asia Type 0 strain. The subtype ravaging Britain is normally found in the Middle East and South Asia. I would note in this context that shortly before the outbreak began in the United Kingdom, British and American air forces attacked Iraq and did so shortly after after George Bush became president of the United States. So note that Iraq had, according to the United Nations, been doing research into foot and mouth disease. Note that shortly before the outbreak began in the United Kingdom, the U.S. and Britain had attacked Iraq. And note also that as we looked at in For the Record number 287, Not only was the Iraqi biological warfare program incorporated in part or engendered in part by Karula al-Tufa, Saddam Hussein's Nazi-affiliated uncle, but the Karula al-Tufa, who was Saddam Hussein's political mentor, was fiercely anti-British. We've looked at Karula al-Tufa's political ideology in For the Record program number 87, and also in the aforementioned 287, and we're going to review another aspect of the Iraqi biological warfare program, the fact that it was initially the official Iraqi purchasing agency for biological agents was called the General Directorate of Veterinary Services, whether or not that's relevant. It certainly is interesting, and it may be relevant. We're going to review a couple of sections now from the book The Death Lobby by Kenneth Timmerman. We looked at this in both For the Record 87 and 287. And of the Iraqi Biological Warfare Development Program at its genesis with the General Directorate of Veterinary Services, we read, Iraq's first attempt to acquire biological weapons of this kind seemed innocent enough. The committee turned to a trusted Ba'athist, Izzat al-Dhuri, then serving on the ruling Revolutionary Command Council as Minister of Agriculture. On November 2, 1974, al-Dhuri signed a contract with the Paris-based Institut Mérieux to set up Iraq's first bacteriological laboratory. The Iraqis explained that they needed to be able to manufacture large quantities of vaccines in order to develop agricultural and animal production. The official Iraqi purchasing agency was called the General Directorate of Veterinary Services. Skipping down, of the involvement of Karula al-Tufa with the General Directorate of Veterinary Services and with the Iraqi BW program, bear in mind that he was fiercely anti-British and had fought with the Nazis in an anti-British uprising during World War II. Al-Dhuri's success won him a promotion and made him a de facto member of the team. The three-man strategic planning committee, along with Saddam himself, his uncle, Karula al-Tufa, and Adnan Habdani. By the end of the year, he was shifted to the Ministry of the Interior, all the while retaining his responsibilities for, quote, agricultural, unquote, development. That, again, from the Death Lobby by Kenneth Timmerman, and that passage, once again, was discussed in For the Record program number 87, and also in For the Record program number 287. Interestingly, and perhaps significantly, foot and mouth is now, according to the British press, beginning to affect humans. Now, I want to stress that I'm not a veterinarian, and I'm certainly not an expert on foot and mouth disease, but all of the previous accounts that I had read, and I've read many accounts of the foot and mouth outbreak in Europe, stressed that there was no danger to humans, that this was not a disease that could be communicated to human beings. Now, it would appear that that assessment is, at best, premature, and once again, this is a fact that raises more questions than it answers. Once again, what I call food for thought and grounds for further research. The following article is from the Financial Times of Tuesday, April 24th of the year 2001. This article is by Michael Mann and Kathy Newman in London. The article is headlined, Suspected Human Foot and Mouth Case Hits Government Campaign. The article reads in part as follows. Government hopes of persuading tourists back to the countryside suffered a serious setback yesterday when a slaughter man in northwest England was suspected of catching foot and mouth disease. The Department of Health said a man involved in the mass cull in Cambria was suffering blistering, which indicated he had become infected with the disease, although final results from medical tests would not be available for a day or two. The news came as the government faced growing concern about the health risks of burning carcasses on mass funeral pyres and seemed certain to undermine last week's claim that the epidemic was now fully under control, unquote. The government has always maintained the risk to humans from foot and mouth is minimal and, with many tourist businesses on the brink of collapse, has urged people to return to rural areas. Skipping down, Peter Ainsworth, culture spokesman for the opposition Conservative Party, said that if the case was confirmed, it would be a, quote, massive setback to the recovery of British tourism, unquote, as some Americans and other visitors who mistakenly believe foot and mouth is a serious risk to human health would decide to stay away. Quote, It's a further massive dent to the image of British tourism at a time when we can ill afford it, unquote, Mr. Ainsworth said. Horrible pun there, by the way. Skipping down yet again. This is incredibly rare, said a Department of Health spokesman. The symptoms are relatively mild, and it should respond well to treatment and clear up quickly, unquote. Well, again, I'm not a veterinarian. I'm certainly not an expert on foot and mouth disease, but the many accounts that I had read stressed that this was a disease that could only affect animals, that there was no danger to humans. Perhaps those journalists were incompletely informed. But again, whatever the significance of this, it should be noted that in addition, obviously, to the meat industry and the animal husbandry industry in the United Kingdom, this is also going to affect the tourism industry there as well, adversely affecting the country. The next day's Financial Times, that being Wednesday, April 25th of the year 2001, had a follow-up article, and there are a couple of more suspected human cases of foot and mouth disease. This article is by John Mason and Kathy Newman, as well as Michael Mann in London. It's headlined, Livestock Disease Suspected in More Humans. Two more suspected cases of foot and mouth disease being transmitted to humans were being investigated by the Department of Health yesterday, as the government's handling of the crisis was strongly criticized by leading independent scientists. Results from the first suspected case involving a slaughterman in Cumbria, northwest England, are due shortly. Officials said the circumstances in which he may have caught the infection were highly unusual and proved there was no cause for concern. The man was moving a decomposing carcass when it exploded. Well, again, I'm certainly not an expert on foot and mouth disease, but one of the questions I have, and this is obviously speculative, I wonder whether perhaps this outbreak in the United Kingdom is indeed the result of bioterrorism, whoever may have been involved, whether the Iraqis, some other element associated with the Underground Reich, or whoever. And I would note that the Underground Reich, as I have called it, embraces many elements. It would involve elements of the Iraqi establishment. It would involve elements of the contemporary American government and many other elements around the world. So there are a number of possible culprits. I wonder whether perhaps the foot-and-mouth outbreak currently afflicting the United Kingdom is indeed the result of bioterrorism, and whether perhaps it might be a genetically altered strain of that particular disease. And again, this is obviously speculative in nature. Once again, in For the Record 287, I speculated about mad cow disease, and we're now going to turn to mad cow disease. I speculated that perhaps mad cow as well might stem from some sort of biological warfare research program, or that its spread may be perhaps accidental, perhaps deliberate. I'm going to review an article that was researched for us by a member of the listening audience. This comes from the Yorkshire Post of March 30th of the year 2001. You can visit their website at www.ypn.co.uk. This is an article by Mike Waits of the Yorkshire Post. It's headlined, Puzzled Scientists Try to Explain Regional Variation in Figures, subtitled Creutzfeldt-Jakob Disease Cases in North, Double Toll in South. CJD is the human variant of mad cow disease. This article reads in part as follows. Scientists have confirmed that cases of the human form of mad cow disease in the North are running at double the rate in the South. A study published in today's medical journal Lancet looked at 84 cases of variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which has so far claimed 10 victims in the Yorkshire region. The researchers found it was twice as common in the north of England and Scotland, but were at a loss to explain the difference after finding no clear link with regional differences in eating habits. Work is to continue on examining possible causes which could ignite a transmission route for the infectious agent. Skipping down. Simon Cousins of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, which carried out the research with the National CJD Surveillance Unit in Edinburgh, said there was no apparent cause for the North-South divide, which first became apparent last year in an initial examination of 52 cases. Quote, "We had difficulty determining whether regional variations in diet might cause these differences since the results of dietary analyses were inconsistent," he said. Again quoting, "Given the recent findings from Leicestershire, we would ideally like to know not just what people ate, but how it was prepared in the abattoir and butcher's shop. It could be these practices were more common in some parts of the country than others. And note the following, quote, "We also need to keep an open mind about other factors unrelated to diet," unquote. These could include the genetic background of victims. All those who developed the disease had a specific genetic makeup, and it could be that people in the North are more genetically susceptible than in other places. Again, that raises more questions than it answers, but as I noted in For the Record program number 287, and as we're going to be reviewing right now, mad cow appears to have stemmed from scrapie. That's a disease that's native to sheep. That's spelled S-C-R-A-P-I-E. And scrapie had been investigated by elements that were involved in the development of biological warfare weaponry. We're going to review a couple of passages now from the book Emerging Viruses by Dr. Leonard G. Horowitz, copyright 1996, in hardcover by Tetrahedron Incorporated. And of scrapie research, we read, "Alternatively, slow viruses were of the greatest interest to WHO, CDC, NIH, and NCI scientists between 1968 and 1974. The reasons for this were not as obvious. The WHO Chronicle reported, "Recent interest in the slow viruses, in particular those causing chronic degenerative disease of the nervous system, the China chronic infectious neuropathic agents viruses," by the way, China is an acronym, "has come from painstaking work with VISNA and scrapie, degenerative diseases of the central nervous system of sheep, and kuru, a degenerative disease of the central nervous system of man restricted to the Foray people of New Guinea and their immediate neighbors. Why so much interest in two sheep viruses that cause nerve disorders and don't infect humans?" Jackie asked. By the way, I would add that scrapie appears to come from a type of protein called a prion. Skipping down, "It's remarkable how closely this matches several of the most prominent features of AIDS," I said. "And there's more. The resistance of the scrapie agent to heat, ether, formalin, and other enzymatic and chemical agents, as well as its very small particle size, poses the question whether it is a conventional virus, an incomplete virus, or some other agent. The findings of different research groups are at variance and in several instances are totally inexplicable within our present concept of infectious agents." Unquote. That reads just like the Department of Defense order for a new infective microorganism that couldn't be defended against, unquote, I remarked. And by the way, I'll stand on the remarkable research that Len Horowitz has done in Emerging Viruses. It's a man for whom I have affection and respect, but this should not be misinterpreted as an endorsement of some of his more recent work, which frankly I think discredits him to a certain extent. I would note, however, that Emerging Viruses is an extremely important book, and that's why I use it, and I believe it to be valid. I would note in this context that now there is a line of theoretical investigation, at least, in the United Kingdom, which would attribute mad cow disease not from scrapie, which had been researched as a possible BW agent, but the alleged infection of an antelope which had been imported into a game park in Britain. In other words, rather like the disinformation about AIDS coming from Africa, we're now hearing that this is mad antelope disease from Africa, which I find far-fetched. That information, or as I believe disinformation, was contained in the Wall Street Journal of April 23rd of the year 2001. This is an AP story, Dateline, Wellington, New Zealand. "Mad cow disease linked to antelope," researchers say. "An African antelope imported for a British game park may have triggered the mad cow disease that has devastated beef here in Britain," New Zealand researchers believe. Scientists from Massey University, led by epidemiologist Roger Morris, are preparing to publish scientific work underpinning the theory, Professor Morris said. The team investigated 35 theories of the origin of the epidemic. If true, the antelope theory would supplant a widely held belief that bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or BSE, originated in sheep infected with a similar disease, scrapie, which were ground up for animal feed. So a lone nut antelope now being blamed for Mad Cow. There's an annotated description of For the Record program number 295 available on the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. There are also For the Record programs archived on WFMU.org and a related website by sister station WFMU. That concludes For the Record program 295. My name is Dave Emery.